My name is Brad Holt. The title of this session is Practical Spiritual Disciplines. This is the first of my sessions ever at Holden, and it's really a great thrill for me to be here. I'll be here for 2 weeks, and this week I will have four presentations. My general subject matter is Christian spirituality, and I have broken it up into different little pieces. So this week we start with a very practical one, spiritual disciplines today. And then tomorrow will be Celtic spirituality, the spirituality of the 5th to the 11th centuries in Ireland and nearby countries. People like Patrick and Bridget belong to that period. The third one will be on Friday. That will be Julian of Norwich. That's the medieval woman mystic who was the first woman to write a book in the English language. There is a great deal in her revelations, and some of you already know her very well. Please come and teach me. But I will at least open the discussion. And on Saturday, we'll have a session on C.S. Lewis on prayer. Many of you know him from his books about fantasy or his Christian apologetics. We'll be focusing on Saturday on his book called Letters to Malcolm, chiefly on prayer. Next week, I haven't quite made up my mind, but some of the things I hope to deal with are African Christian spirituality, 12-step spirituality, New Age spirituality. These are all areas of interest of mine, and we'll see how that comes out. Some of you may be here, some of you may not, but my general interest is in the history and present situation of Christian spirituality, and that has come to expression in my one book that I have written called Thirsty for God. I'm going to pass around a copy a little bit later. Right now it's serving as a bookmark. So you have a look at it, together with some other books that I will recommend. Thirsty for God is an attempt to talk about 20 centuries of Christian spirituality in 150 pages in user-friendly, non-technical language with study helps. So it's quite an ambitious attempt. And it's been a very good experience to work on it with my wife, Linda. At the end of each of the 8 chapters of Thirsty for God, there are 2 suggested spiritual disciplines which the reader may wish to experiment with. And you see them on the board on your right side there. Having said that much about Thirsty for God, I want to go back now and start properly, as I had intended, by reading you a psalm. And I invite you to hear it meditatively. This is Psalm 63. O God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My body longs for you in a dry and weary land where there is no water. I have seen you in the sanctuary and beheld your power and your glory. Because your love is better than life, my lips will glorify you. I will praise you as long as I live, and in your name I will lift up my hands. My soul will be satisfied as with the richest of foods. With singing lips, my mouth will praise you. On my bed, I remember you. I think of you through the watches of the night. Because you are my help, I sing in the shadow of your wings. My soul clings to you. Your right hand upholds me. They who seek my life will be destroyed. They will go down to the depths of the earth. They will be given over to the sword and become food for jackals. But the king will rejoice in God. All who swear by God's name will praise him, while the mouths of liars will be silenced. Today we're going to talk about three spiritual disciplines, and you will have the opportunity to practice one of them for a few minutes, and then we will talk together about what it was like. I plan to talk for about half an hour, give you about 15 minutes to try out something, and then about 15 minutes to talk about it. Disciplines comes from the same word as disciple. Another name for it is ascetics or asceticism. That word has a lot of negative connotations for many of us. Perhaps a better word would be good habits. Implied, however, is that it takes some decision, some choice, some effort, some pattern. There are people who believe that following Jesus Christ does not cost anything. I'm afraid they have made it too easy. Both Kierkegaard and Bonhoeffer were Lutherans who were opposed to that easygoing, go with the stream kind of Lutheranism. However, there is a danger in disciplines, and I want to start out by saying there are two fundamental dangers connected with two fundamental doctrines of the church. One danger is to denigrate the body, to consider the spirit better than the body. Some people who use the word spirituality maybe have that in mind, but I and most of the writers I know of do not. We mean that spirituality, for all the clumsiness of that word, touches all of human life, all the levels of our personality, all of our body, all of our past, all of our future, all of our relationships, and so on. In fact, for me, the way I define Christian spirituality is in terms of four basic relationships: our relationship to God, to ourselves, to other people, and to the creation. So anything that has anything to do with any of those four relationships counts as spirituality. The doctrine of creation says that God made all things good, including our bodies. So whatever kind of asceticism or habits or disciplines we adopt, we need to keep in mind that basic principle that our bodies and this world was made by a good God. The second matter of concern, especially for Lutherans, is the tendency to build up merit by doing spiritual disciplines. By saying, God, do you love me now? I've been fasting, I've been praying. This is addressed so clearly in the New Testament. And so I think it should be clear to you. And our fundamental doctrinal concern as Lutherans is that we are made right with God by God's love for us, not by any achievement of ours of any sort whatever. So those two cautionary words, I think, need to be sounded about any kinds of spiritual disciplines. Now, the range of such spiritual disciplines is virtually unlimited, but you have two lists on the board here, and I'd just like to run over them quickly so you get an idea of the range that have been written about in two books. Richard Foster's book, The Celebration of Discipline, which has been out for some time now, and I'll pass it around so you have a look if you like. This is from the library, and you could check it out immediately after class if you want to. I didn't check it out yet, but I'll just bring it in there if you'd like to check it out. And also somewhat later comes a workbook to go along with the Celebration of Discipline. He divides them into the inward disciplines, the outward disciplines, and the corporate disciplines. Inner are meditation, prayer, fasting, and study. Outward are simplicity of life, solitude, submission to one another in the community, service, and the corporate ones are confession, mutual confession, worship, mutual guidance, and celebration. My own list, which is roughly connected with the chapters that they accompany, includes silence and meditation, prayer and pondering, or as it is known in Latin, lectio divina, what the monks did when they walked in the cloisters with their prayer book and read very slowly and meditatively. Communal worship and fasting, the Jesus Prayer and icons from the Eastern tradition, the Lord's Prayer, particularly from Martin Luther's treatment of that in his little letter to the barber about how to pray, and the examen, or the looking deeply in one's life, journaling and spiritual direction, simple living and writing a letter. I have Bread for the World in mind, some of you know about that. And service and vocation. Now today, I'm going to invite you to try out three, as I said, one of three probably, although they're closely related to each other. They are meditation, prayer, and journaling. Actually, if you look at this list carefully, you see that quite a few of these have to do with prayer. They're not all separate. Now, I'd like to talk about each of those three disciplines briefly before I invite you to try one out. My assumption behind this whole presentation is that not everybody finds the same things useful. One of the things that I assumed when I was taught about prayer in the church was that, of course, the same method must be used by everyone. There is a right way to pray, and we all must do it that way. I have since come to the conclusion, along with many other people, that because of our personality differences, because of our different ages, all the differences that make us distinctive, different styles of prayer and meditation and journaling are more appropriate for different people. And if you grew up as I did and you haven't experimented with various ways of doing it, you may not have stumbled yet on a way that could be very fruitful for you. So I invite you to make a beginning at such an experimentation today. Prayer is probably the most fundamental Christian spiritual discipline. The assumption is that the Christian life is not simply assenting to certain truths, nor is it simply acting in an ethical way, but it involves a union with God. This morning I pointed out that phrase from Philippians in the Bible study in the early session, where translation I was using translates it, "You are in union with Christ Jesus." You pass over that "in Christ Jesus" in the RSV rather easily. John was saying that it means incorporate in Christ Jesus, which suggests the social dimension. in union with Christ Jesus suggests the mystical dimension. And that means, by mystical here, I don't mean anything mystical, anything secret, only that our lives are lived in God and God lives in us. So many times I hear people say, my prayer never got above the ceiling. And I think, what sort of concept of God does that suggest? My word would be, your prayer doesn't need to get above the ceiling because God is right there in the room with you. There was a transition in my prayer life a few years ago when, after years and years of feeling guilty about not praying enough, I somehow accepted the grace of God in a new way, and I came to see that God is longing for my prayer, but God is not up there blaming me if I don't call home. A good bumper sticker: you are a child of God. Call home soon. I went to a retreat house near the Twin Cities. I come from Minneapolis. This is a Catholic woman who has bought a farm and made a number of cells, individual anchorite cells, for people who would like to come and spend some time alone with God. One time she told me there was a man who came up from the Baptist tradition, which is a little bit of a jump for a Roman Catholic, you know. Not a tradition known for solitude prayer. His name happened to be John, so she always called him John the Baptist. He was telling her when he arrived that he felt kind of guilty about spending this time up here by himself when actually he should be working, or he should be with his family, teaching his children, or some other useful thing like that. And she said, let me assure you, I who have been in religious education all my life, that you're coming up here to spend a day with God will have more effect on your children than a year of Sunday school. Well, that made him feel better. She walked him out to the little hut, beautiful little huts that she has out there. And she saw him stand in the doorway and the tears were running down his eyes. And he said, I'm just so overwhelmingly happy to have this day to be quiet with God. So she left him there and she was walking home and she was just rejoicing and saying, my place is worthwhile. This man is going to have a wonderful time. And then it was as if God spoke to her and said, if you think he's happy, how do you think I feel? We don't use our bodies enough in prayer. We don't use our imaginations enough in prayer, I think. Speaking about myself, of course. I was taught that this is the way you pray. Well, it might be a good posture for confessing one's sins. I think so. But if you're praising God, it's much better to stand up and put your hands over your head in the biblical posture. Or if you are surrendering yourself to God, it might be better to prostrate yourself on the floor. Or if you are simply being present to God, having your hands open is a very evocative gesture. It's both an offering posture and a receiving posture. And you don't have to bow your head or close your eyes, but do what feels good to you. I'm turning to a few words about meditation now. From a Christian perspective, meditation could be viewed as listening to God. There are Eastern meditation disciplines which you may find helpful, yoga or other disciplines. They were developed, however, in a different thought world. Christians believe in a personal God with whom we have a personal relationship. It's not just me and the universe out there. It's me with someone who loves me. And that makes a big difference. Meditation for a Christian can be done in many ways. One can meditate on a biblical text, and I'm going to suggest that today for those of you who'd like to try that out. Meditation can also be done on by taking a leaf of a tree and just looking at it. Or if you happen to be near any mountains or lakes, can be very nice to meditate in that setting, considering the world that God has made. In meditation and prayer, the consistent problem that we all face is wandering thoughts. Oh, I tried it, but 5 minutes later, my mind was way off somewhere. Look at wandering thoughts as an accepted and even a healthy fact of learning prayer and meditation. When your mind goes off somewhere and then you suddenly realize that it did, think of it as, now this is I think an Eastern illustration, think of it as a monkey. It's run off from your tree and it's going over there for that grapefruit or whatever it is it sees. And just go and take the monkey gently, bring it back to the tree. Don't blame it, don't scold it. Just bring it back gently and say, okay, we're not doing that right now. On the other hand, you might also think about what is that grapefruit there that monkey was so attracted to? And is there something there that I should pay attention to that pops into my mind? Depending on how deeply into meditation you are, it can be a rather profound word that pops into your mind unbidden. The third discipline is journaling. How many of you have kept a diary or a journal at some point in your life? How many of you are doing it right now? This is an expandable, flexible kind of discipline that can be used by Christians and non-Christians alike for many good purposes. And I want to recommend Ron Klug's book, How to Keep a Spiritual Journal. In the earlier chapter 2, he says, experiencing the benefits of a spiritual journal. I just want to read to you the chapter headings here. Growth in self-understanding, an aid to the devotional life, guidance and decision-making, making sense and order of life, releasing emotions and gaining perspective, greater awareness of daily life, self-expression and creativity, clarifying beliefs, setting goals and managing your time, and working through problems. Let me pass that around to you. And here is Thirsty for God. Please, I'll start this one over here. All right. This is the time for you to try one of these out, and then we'll talk afterwards. You'll need paper and pen or pencil. I have a stack of paper here. I have a stack of pencils here for anybody who doesn't have it. anybody over here needs some, just pass it around. Take it if you need it. This is recycled paper. It's been used on one side. And if you don't have something to write on, you might like to have a Bible. Sorry. They didn't tell me I had to be good at this when I came to Holden. All right, here are my suggestions. Of course, you can do whatever you want for the next 15 minutes. You can just sit and rest if you want. But here are my suggestions. These three types of discipline obviously flow into each other rather well. But I suggest that you choose one to concentrate on: prayer, meditation, or journaling. And having done so, then I have these three suggestions for you. Maybe you've never tried this before. The one for prayer is perhaps the one that will seem most odd to you. But if you don't like it, do something else in prayer. But do try it. And that is, I suggest that you, we're going to spend a few minutes just in silence before you start this, that you write a prayer to God in the hand that you don't usually use to write. Now, what that does is it slows you down. You think about what you are writing. It's going to feel really odd, but I suggest you try it if you're going to do prayer. Write a prayer to God from the deepest longing of your heart. If you are doing meditation, my suggestion is that you take the last three verses of Matthew 11. Take a Bible, open to Matthew 11, verses 28, 29, and 30, a well-known passage. Or if you wish, another passage is fine. And then just sit quietly with that passage. If you choose journaling, then I would suggest either one of two processes. One is flow writing, which means you just keep writing, never stop. And it helps for inhibited people like me. That's what's good therapy. If you're very hypercritical, you're wondering, am I going to write a journal like Kierkegaard's or Wesley's or somebody's? And you have to just reclaim and put aside that critical faculty that will paralyze you. Just do flow writing. Just keep writing. Never let yourself stop. That's one possibility. The second is under the last 24 or 48 hours and ask yourself, where has been the grace of God for me in this last day or two? What's been going on in my life? Is there a whisperer saying, I love you, through the experiences I've had in the last day or two? Write your thoughts about that. These are my suggestions. Now, before we start, as I said, I'd like to everybody start together with a few moments of centering or quietness. And to do this well, you do need to sit up and comfortably in your chair, both feet on the floor. Find a comfortable place for your hands. If you can put down your instruments somehow, theme for all three of these disciplines is paying attention. And we often don't. So we're trying to get ourselves ready to pay attention. So now, if you will close your eyes and relax your body, take three deep breaths. You may or may not like to say anything to the rest of us of what it felt like to do what you did, but I'd like to give that opportunity for those who would like to, or who would like to raise questions about any of the spiritual disciplines. Let me just invite those of you who wrote a prayer with your opposite hand, if you would care to lead off by saying something. Yes.
I just want to confirm what you said about that discipline. It certainly slows you down. And I'm not a writer. And so often I can think of what to say, but I was able to think of all kinds of things while this poor right hand was struggling away. Appreciated this insight. I will do this again sometime, maybe soon.
Can we give comments from the balcony?
Of course.
Because I also did that, and I only wrote a few sentences. To me, it was really frustrating, and I quit and started with the right hand because I knew I would never, ever, ever even dent what I thought. I mean, as ideas poured in, I had to quit and use the right hand.
Okay.
I just found it awkward.
Yes?
I'm a very verbose person, and I write these long, involved letters to people, and because I had to write with my left hand, I thought, well, I'll choose my words a little more carefully. And I found it very tiring. It was very exhausting. My hand was really worn out, and I had a very hard time controlling it. But I felt like I wanted to get it down on paper, you know, but he'll never read it. But I did find that it would keep you more focused.
Keeps you focused?
Yeah.
To me, it makes me feel like a child.
Yeah, it does.
It reminds me of how much work it was to try to learn to write in the first place. But also, it makes me feel childlike, which I don't often enough do. But even if you write the prayer with your normal hand, writing a prayer does have benefits as opposed to just letting the thought flit through your mind. It helps you to focus and clarify. Now, let me just open it up to anyone who care to comment or question anything.
On the prayer part or other
parts? Yeah, any part.
I was curious, your thoughts about journaling. I was just noticing in Fluke's book that he seems to start by, or at least this section I'm just open to, meditating on the Bible before journaling, and that somehow, I mean, that's one aspect. Another thing that strikes me is that they're great poets, and they're, you know, they've written, but there are lots of great poets that have never written because they don't feel the need to express themselves through writing because they do it in lives. And I just wonder if one of the disciplines is living well. And if you live well, you may not need some of these more structured things, like the Baptist who goes, I understand, you know, it's a time of quiet for him. But I guess the parallel for me is the writer. If you live these things that you feel, you don't feel the need to write them down.
That would be the world's loss. But I understand,
so.
Your,
I understand your point. Right. And it takes time to stop and share. I guess what you're saying is that the loss is that you're not sharing it with someone else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, that person who can live that out, I'd like to learn from that person.
I understand. But that takes me then back to the journal. Sharing all those insights in your journal, I mean, is that for someone else, or is it just sort of a catharsis?
Yeah, that's it.
Just a release, and I guess it could be both. But
it could be either or both.
I think a lot of people start journals thinking, okay, I need someone to talk to, I need an emotional release. They get into it, and then it's almost like a selfishness, you know, why don't I do this with another human being?
Because I can be fully myself with my journal. The journal can be my most tight-lipped confidant. I can tell my journal things I can't tell my spouse. Or my past.
There are things like that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'd like to question this writing a letter.
Mm-hmm.
You seem to have something in mind.
Yes.
I haven't.
Yes. I don't mean any letter in that.
You don't mean like
although,
the congressman about the latest.
Yes, I do mean that.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm. In fact, in our age, writing a letter is a strange thing to do. Writing a letter on paper is becoming a lost art.
Oh, no, you meant handwriting, not word processing.
No, what I have in mind in this discipline is advocacy.
Okay.
Speaking out for people who don't have much of a voice.
When it comes to writing a prayer, then you need to, for me, to struggle with what am I going to call God?
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a very profound process for me in the last several years. For one name who doesn't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then also the prayer, I've always had a prayer journal. That is the place where I must be honest because I'm talking with God. And sometimes it's very joyful, and other times it goes through that painful process where I do need to meet that which hurts, and then also coming out again, and sometimes it's months.
Thanks for sharing that you have obviously thought deeply about these things, and if writing a prayer makes one aware of the fact that you are confronted with who is God to you, not just who is God to the hymn book, but who is God to me? How do I picture God? What are the implications of my pictures? Who is God beyond the pictures? Who is God in relationship to Jesus? All of these sorts of theological questions come up in prayer and in an experiential way. Yes?
Could you talk about the sense of resting in God? A lot of what we do in our spirituality is rather a discursive mode of meditative behavior. There's a lot of laundry lists that perhaps come up in prayer, but for me, what I've evolved to is an appreciation of the need to feel myself as beloved. In the sense that Henry Nouwen talks about. And a lot of these disciplines are very cognitive in their approach. And perhaps they lead to that experience of feeling oneself as the beloved. But so often for me in my own practices it sort of doesn't get me quite there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in reading some of the works of the Desert Fathers, I have a clear sense that really what they were trying to do was to experience themselves as the beloved, and in doing so, everything else comes.
In a backward way, we can think of the sermon last night. I have trouble keeping time straight, but I think it was last night at the Eucharist. That what the young man needed was to experience himself as the beloved, and the parable was to say, not that. I fully agree with what you've said, and it seems to me that people being interested in spirituality these days are very much interested in getting beyond left brain, discursive, logical, intellectual kinds of approaches. At the same time, they need not to be lost, it seems to me. What we need is a good connection between the two. Resting in God and resting in God's love, I think of that as a kind of meditation, but not an active meditation. The story is of the priest who comes into his church and he sees this man sitting there. He's not saying his beads, he's not doing anything. Comes back next day, he's still sitting there. Third day, he says, "What are you doing in my church anyhow?" Well, the man says, "I just look at him and he looks at me and we're glad to be together." I compare it to a good friendship in which you don't always have to be talking. There are some people in this world that I just love to be with. And God can be like that to me too. Yes?
I see both of lists, and I see a common thread that runs through. There are so many facets to our awareness of what's going on, and this merely gives us, basically I see, two toolboxes to be able to access the awareness that God is about us, is with us, is in everything that we see, everything that we do, and that these are all merely different devices to help bring us to that continued awareness. And I think something that might be added, and maybe it's already there and I just didn't discern it, but the study of understanding of our physical world, because the more we truly understand it, the more in awe I think we become how profound God's love for us really is because of the intricacy of this creation. And the only way you really understand the intricacy is through deeper study and trying to have a deeper awareness of how all that is about us functions and interacts. And the more you learn of that, the more you realize that it wasn't just simple happenstance, unless that happenstance is by a pattern laid down by God at some point.
On the general point, I would say that neither of these lists is complete. I think of it in terms of Paul's lists of the spiritual gifts in the New Testament. He has three different lists. They're all different. And there's no saying that, you know, he never says this is all there is. So they're sort of like examples. And I look at these two lists in that way also.